Hi, Jody.
Hi, Steve.
Hi there. Well, thanks for offering to talk to us. I understand from about a week ago now that you are now the Orca maintainer. And could you just tell us first of all a little bit about what Orca is?
So Orca is the screen reader for users who are blind or visually impaired of the GNOME desktop. And it provides access in speech and braille and magnification.
Okay. How long ago did you first get involved with Orca, and how did that come about?
I think it's been about 4 years.
Okay.
And to make a very long story short, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts was threatening to switch the official state document format from Microsoft Word to ODF.
Hmm.
And because of that, there was a huge brouhaha in the blindness community. And I happened to work for the Carroll Center for the Blind in Massachusetts. And part of the brouhaha included us. And we were concerned. We didn't know what was going on.
Hmm.
And I looked into the issue. I wrote a blog entry. And a little bit later, during the brouhaha, one of the many companies that came to visit the Carroll Center and talk to us about the situation was Sun Microsystems.
Okay.
And Peter Korn and Willie Walker and one or two gentlemen also from Sun that I just honestly don't remember who they were now, came and demonstrated various assistive technologies that the Sun Accessibility Program Office was involved with.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was the Orca screen reader.
Okay.
And so that's how I was introduced to it. And I was already interested in it. I was already at the time I was using KDE,
right,
but I was
okay.
already an Ubuntu user. And I was really interested in, getting involved and learning more about free and open source screen readers. And then just a coincidence, Will Walker lives literally 6 miles from me.
Okay.
Kind of thing. So it was, it just seemed like a really good match. And I signed up for the list and started testing and filing bugs. And
Now, if you just say a bit about your work at the Carotech Center, you involve with users, if I got that right.
Less so now.
Okay.
I used to be an itinerant teacher,
okay.
teaching assistive technology, among other things, to kids who are blind in their schools, like JAWS and Window Eyes and Zoom Text and stuff like that. Now I'm the curriculum developer for Carotech, so I write distance education courses on how to use mainstream and assistive technology, unfortunately for Windows, because
right.
that's what pays the bills at the Carroll Center, and that's what pays my salary. So I am writing and recording and developing courses and doing very little direct teaching.
Okay, so that's your day job now.
That's my day job.
I know I've seen a lot of the activity on the Orca list, which I sort of lurk on, and you've got a second 24-hour job, which is working on Orca, and especially now that you're effectively module maintainer, as Willie unfortunately is no longer able to take that position. And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
but the thing I was going to say is you now do an awful lot of highly technical work. It'd be interesting to know how you went from, I know you said you were using KDE, so you're obviously familiar with open source and Linux, but how they work. Could you just describe your journey from being what sounds like a user to being someone who is actually a module maintainer, which means you have commit privileges on the code, you make decisions about what goes on with Orca. Just like to know how that came about.
I mean, the credit really goes to Will and Rich Burridge, who unfortunately is no longer part of our team. Basically, I tend to be kind of an airhead, and so what I would do, because I'm also curious, and so what I would do is I'd ask a silly question on the list about how to do something, or I'd ask in Bugzilla, when I filed a bug, and Will, and especially Rich Burridge, kind of became almost an unofficial mentor to
okay.
me. He would sometimes just give me the answer, and sometimes he'd say, well, can you Google it? And sometimes he would, say, well, if I were going to do it, here's the kind of approach I would take, and kind of nudged me in the right direction.
Okay.
So I still had to figure stuff out most of the time on my own. But I was kind of steered, and if I kind of got in the wrong, you know, if I was pursuing the wrong path, Will and Rich would kind of redirect me back into the right path. So I would pretty much, so I learned myself very much with their direction and mentorship. And it just kind of grew from there, from, you know, from how to use Orca, which was, you know, the kind of skill I already had, to how to, you know, start debugging, to how to submit patches, okay. to how, you know, I mean, it just kind of, it was a slow progression over the years.
Do you remember what your first patch was?
My first patch, I'm not entirely sure. The first script was for the Adobe Acrobat Reader.
Okay. Orca is a scriptable screen reader, which means that it can be tailored for specific use cases and specific products. So is that something that a fairly technical end user would normally do? Is that what you did?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I've done JAWS scripting before, but when I think of all the, you know, fairly skilled, highly technical end users of JAWS that I know, they're not necessarily writing JAWS scripts.
Okay.
That doesn't mean they can't be. That doesn't mean, in fact, one of my missions now that the Orca team has gotten even smaller is to enable more members of the community to start scripting themselves. And, you know, I don't have a lot of time to handhold people, but, you know, basically do what Rich and Will did, you know, for me, which is kind of, you have to be independent and figure this stuff out, but just kind of keep nudging people so that they figure stuff out in a timely fashion and can become contributors. But so it's a long way of saying yes, I think technical, highly skilled technical end users can and should be writing scripts.
Okay.
But I don't think that happens.
No, okay. It's a bit of a hurdle for someone to come over. So you found helpful for you was friendly mentoring by the sound of it.
Yeah. It helps a lot.
What was the advantage of an open source screen reader to users?
Well, it depends on the class of user. So I don't know what happens in the UK, but in the United States, most users who are blind are not purchasing their own assistive technology. They get it through agencies, you know, like vocational rehabilitation agencies. If they're employed, they really need to be getting it from their employer. But the point is, Windows screen readers, they cost at least, you know, $1,000 U.S. And more, you know, like $1,200. That just for the screen reader. Then there's the cost of Windows, and there's the cost of Microsoft Office. You know, and you can say, well, can't you use OpenOffice? Last time I checked, the two, you know, $1,000 screen readers that everyone's using didn't work with OpenOffice. You know, so those users, because they don't have, you know, someone else is purchasing it, that doesn't, you know, so what? JAWS is fine. The rest of the world, Orca, because Orca is open source and because it's free, that can mean the difference between I can use a computer and I cannot use a computer. And we have a lot of users in Eastern Europe, we have a lot of users in India, we have a lot of users in Latin America. And so for them, you know, the fact that we have a pretty full-featured screen reader that is totally free, that they can use, means, like I said, it means that they can use a computer, whereas otherwise they wouldn't be able to, just because of the sheer cost of all the other technology users who are blind need. As far as, you know, all users everywhere, including those in the U.S. who have the luxury of all of this assistive technology. One of the things I really find lacking in the other assistive technologies is that they have their own proprietary closed-source scripting language. And what you're writing a script for is other closed-source software, like Microsoft Word kind of thing. And so what you wind up doing is you have a fairly limited, fairly undocumented scripting language, and you can't see the internals to, you know, the screen reader. You can't see the internals to what you're providing access to, and you kind of, I mean, hacking would be, doesn't even do it justice. You're kind of hoping that you can put together, you know, some lines of code that will actually cause the screen reader to do the right thing, and most of the time it doesn't work, or it doesn't work gracefully. You write a script in Python. Python is well documented. Python, any module that you can import in Python, you could then implement in an Orca script.
Right.
If you want to write
that's
this really crazy Orca script that sung and danced and whatever, you learn how to do Python, you can do it.
Yeah.
And half the time, the problems, I mean, the whole reason you write a script, well, there's several reasons you write a script. One of them is to provide, you know, more compelling access. You know, like, for instance, in Pigeon. If you and I are having a conversation in Pigeon, what a normal screen reader behavior would read the area where I'm typing a message to you.
Yeah.
Because that's what has focus, and that's where the action is. But every time you send in a new message, we want Orca to speak it and braille it.
Mm-hmm.
And for Orca to do that, so that's not a bug in Pigeon, but that's a case where, you know, what has focus is not necessarily what is of interest.
Right.
And so a script allows you to do custom handling to provide more, that's the more compelling access.
Okay.
A lot of times, though, you know, it's not so much that an application, say, for the GNOME desktop is inaccessible, but it's not quite using, say, standard GTK, or it's not, there's something about it that's just not quite, I don't want to say not quite right, but it's different enough that Orca's default handling just isn't working.
Okay.
And so in that case, we need to, you know, for lack of a better word, script around that unique application.
Hmm.
And that's not necessarily more compelling access, that's just providing access in a meaningful fashion. And a lot of times when we're doing that, the reality is we're hacking around an open source bug.
Okay.
Okay, you know, I mean, it's a bug in the open source mainstream product that we're working with. The most compelling thing, you know, the best solution, the least fragile solution at that point is not to hack around it in Orca,
mm-hmm.
but to actually figure out what on earth is going wrong in the mainstream application.
Okay.
And, you know, try to get them to fix it. And point is, you know, Orca, it's not just Orca the open source screen reader. It's Orca the open source screen reader providing access to other open source components and open source desktop. And that whole everything put together means that users are going to have the most, you know, reliable, stable solution that they can customize completely.
Right. GNOME, for the first time, have been exhibiting here at the CSUN conference, and we've had a lot of interest here. But one of the things we've been saying to people, out of the box, you get, we say the complete stack, which is not necessarily language that everyone understands, but what it means is from the basic operating system features up to end-user assistive technology like screen readers, there is the accessibility is built in all the way up. And I think that's something that, as you point out, people find very useful. And I think the fact that it can be customized and the problems can be fixed is very powerful. Scripting sort of sits a little bit between what an end user does and what a developer does.
Right.
With Orca, because it's a scriptable, it's got a core and then the scripts, which do a lot of functionality, the edges blur. But could you just perhaps go into a little bit more detail about how, because it is an open source community of several open source projects, that sort of ways that you, if you find a bug in another product like Pigeon or Firefox or WebKit, what are the sort of ways that you work with people to fix those problems? How does that happen?
Me personally or end users?
Either. Let's start with end users and then what you do as somebody who's really technical down to the metal.
What we've encouraged end users to do, and this is something that Will Walker started, is the Orca, you know, GNOME Bugzilla includes Orca as one of its modules, and we encourage users to, you know, report bugs on the list and also to file bugs against Orca. At that point, when, you know, we start triaging it, we often find out it's not really our bug, and then what's happening right now, which is something I'm hoping to start changing, but what happens right now is, you know, essentially one of the Orca developers, you know, does the triage, figures out where the bug is,
okay,
f- at the very minimum, files a bug, say, against Firefox, against WebKit, against, Evolution, against wherever the bug actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the nature of the bug, and, if I can fix the bug, I'm going to give them a patch.
Okay.
If I can kind of point to where the bug seems to be, I give them as much information as I can, because the closer they have to a fix that looks valid, the sooner they're going to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And
what was the other question?
Oh, well, for developers, you moved on to that, I guess. So the process seems to be for end users is that they let the community, the Orca community, know there's a problem. That then becomes a ticket
and
Bugzilla, and then someone triages it to work out.
Yeah, and we keep, even if the bug is not in Orca,
mm-hmm.
we keep the bug. We quote unquote block the bug. So that users, it's one-stop shopping, as Will puts it.
Right.
No matter where the bug is, if it's related to Orca, if you search the Orca bugs, with any luck, you'll find a reference to the problem, even if the bug is actually, say, a Firefox bug or a WebKit bug or something else. So that makes it easier for users. What I've just very recently started doing on the list, and I'm going to put more documentation on the Orca Wiki, is... the Orca team is, the tiny Orca team has gotten even tinier, and a lot of the initial triage I do, it's not hard. It's tedious. It's kind of boring.
Yes.
But it's not hard. And we had some recent Firefox related issues, and you get the nightly build. And does the bug happen there? And if the bug happens there, okay, go back a month. Did the bug happen there?
Yes.
kind of thing. And you pinpoint it down, because if you can file a bug, say, against Firefox and say, on September 10th, this particular change, had this particular impact, the Firefox guys turn around and they fix it, right away, which is awesome. You don't have to know how to script. You have to be able to download different builds, try them with Orca, jot down the date. I mean, those kind of things are really easy, and that's something I think users can do. And not just with Firefox. I mean, I'm using Firefox as an example, because just the past couple of weeks I was doing a lot of work in that area. Which is, a long-winded way of saying that right now I described what I do versus what users do, and I really, we need, and I'm hoping the user community is going to take on a lot of the ownership of that initial bug triage.
Okay.
And to start filing appropriate bugs against the mainstream component, rather than starting just with Orca.
Hmm.
Firefox bugs get filed against Firefox.
Okay, yes. That makes a lot of sense. As long as you've got a good community, you can do that little step.
I've already seen a couple of users do it.
Okay. Can you tell us a bit about the user community? The sort of people you have and what sort of thing they do?
Well, what's interesting is, when you don't actually meet people face-to-face, you just know what they disclose on the list.
Sure.
And, you kind of get bits and pieces. As with, unfortunately, most things, technology and open source, we have a few women users. These are women, people on the list.
Mm-hmm.
We could have thousands of women users, and I just don't know it.
No, they're not engaged.
It tends to be mostly men. So, it's basically just a normal subset of the rest of the open source community. So a little more geeky.
Yeah.
Mostly guys, kind of thing. We have a lot of users who are using Braille, a lot of users who are not using Braille and just using speech output. We have some magnification users.
Mm-hmm.
And again, these are people who are, communicating with us. What the actual user population is hard to say.
You would think 50% of users would be women. So what's the barrier that they're facing?
As a woman in the open source community, I should have an answer to this.
Yes.
But I have the same question with, why am I the only woman at this Accessibility Hack Fest? Why am I only one of three women at the Boston GNOME Summit?
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Okay.
It's an issue, and it's something that we, in terms of, independent of accessibility and Orca and all of that, it's something we need to figure out.
Yes.
And I have no idea why. For the, I mean, the only thing I can think of, and I haven't really experienced this myself, is that, although maybe in a way I've experienced it, but it was a positive experience. Okay. Earlier when, you know, towards the beginning of the interview, you know, how did I get from being a user, you know, slash assistive technology specialist to, you know, God, I'm now the Orca maintainer. I didn't get handheld. Again, I got very appropriate direction and mentoring.
Okay.
But in the end, it was, you know, read this, you know, it was kind of like enough of a hint for me to go out and do my thing. And if I had a problem, you know, yes, Will and Rich would help. But, it, you know, I think sometimes women, and I don't want to overgeneralize now, we should probably cut this out of the interview, but I think that women, some women might find it, that sort of overall culture, you know, the geeky, you're independent on your own, you know, read the blessed manual kind of
right,
thing,
okay.
that kind of attitude might inherently be something that guys deal with better or women prefer
right.
to avoid, you know. I tend to thrive in that kind of situation.
Okay.
Because it forces me to figure stuff out and to really think and to really problem solve. But that's my only theory.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's something we've got to address. But you might be pleased to know that we had the Project Possibility students here who Project Possibility encouraged students to work in a weekend competition to hack on some accessibility code.
Right.
And this was the first year that we had some working on some GNOME features, which was brilliant. They worked on Caribou, the on-screen keyboard. But of the two winning teams, one was the Caribou team, and the other created a mobile currency reader, because your American bills are all the same size. If you're blind, you don't have a clue which one you've got.
You have to fold them.
Oh, there is a way, is there?
Well, the technique is to fold them in different ways.
Oh, I see. The ones in your pocket.
Yes.
But you need to know what they are first before.
Yes.
You have to.
So they have to be identified. So you got to trust someone to identify them correctly.
Yes.
And then you have to have the time. You know, if you're not being rushed to get out of the way of the cash register to fold them, and if you screw that up or if you don't fold, you know, whatever that, then you don't know anymore. So that sounds like a really awesome.
Okay. Project. So their project was it was running on an Android phone. We take a photo of the bill, and that would then send some information actually to a server for the raw processing power, and that came back with a result about using some image recognition. But one of the team there was a woman, so that was good to see. But out of 12, one out of 12 students.
And
I don't know the figures out of all the teams. It'd be interesting to find out. But
that's general computer science, right?
Yeah, it is.
So in other words,
not accessibility. So it's going to be less.
But my point is. You know, so my experience, and probably a lot of your experience, is, so we're looking at, you know, how many women accessibility-related users and developers are there, and then, well, how many are there in the GNOME community?
Mm-hmm.
But now we're saying, how many are there in computer science?
Yes.
You know, so that, which, the, you know, those people might not ever become, I mean, I hope they, it sounds like awesome teams, and I hope they stay with us. But it sounds like across the board in the field of computer science and software development, that we still have a gender problem.
Yes, definitely. I think that's the case. That's been my experience all the way through, probably through engineering as well. But because I did electrical and electronic engineering course, and there's only one woman on that. But I don't know. You tend to think the user community, those who are helping, working in the service industries or support industries, there tend to be a lot more women in that area, I think, than men. That seems to be my experience.
Well, in terms
of, is that true?
Well, I was going to say. The one thing I like, and I say as a joke, but it actually is quite convenient, I like about coming to, say, a Hackfest, especially, you know, or a Boston Summit, is there's never a line for the bathroom. Whereas when I go to my professional conferences for my day job with the Carroll Center, it's all women, and you can be waiting for like 15 minutes to go to the bathroom.
Right, okay. So what we've got to do is figure out how to get those women to join, those who are working in visual impairment, to get involved with the Orca List and then...
Well, and I don't. I'm just thinking of my colleagues. They don't necessarily feel comfortable with the Windows technology. You know, anything that's going to involve, installing Linux distros and installing OpenSolaris has gotten considerably easier over the years.
Yes, absolutely.
But the reality is sometimes it's still more work. It can be a little more intimidating. You have to actually read and think a little bit more than you have to do when installing, say, Windows or Mac.
Yes. But when it's installed, the user experience is very...
Yeah, I agree.
Most of the time is very similar. In fact, when I'm not coding, when I'm just surfing and writing documents, and I really don't notice the difference between Ubuntu and Windows very much at all.
Well, Ubuntu's the stable one.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's true. And there's a lot of work.
So when does it crash?
Yes. But there's a lot of work to get to that position. Absolutely. They're the one really have driven that, I think. Yeah. So full marks to them, Ubuntu. One last question then. You mentioned that the Orca team are small. We heard and you thought for a while it was going to be just you, and we were panicking, I know. And then we heard that Oracle are funding a couple of guys from China, is that right, to do a bit of work?
Yes.
But it's not just an Orca, is it? That's across...
Right, and they'd be the ones to address that, not me. But my understanding is that... one of the developers who's already working in accessibility is going to continue working in accessibility, and including, you know, as time permits, doing a little bit of work in Orca. Mm. And then a developer who was not doing any work in Orca specifically, and who I think is fairly new to accessibility, is going to be able to work hopefully half time on, you know, all things related to his job and GNOME accessibility, okay, which will include Orca.
Right.
So that's two. So it's going to be three of us so far. You know, each kind of working, you know, part time, but that I still think that's going to be a huge improvement. And there are a couple of different grants that people I'm aware of in Europe applying for, okay, that would include doing work. So if they, you know, if that funding comes through, that it would include doing work on Orca.
Okay.
So slowly but surely, you know, bits and pieces, we're growing the team.
Brilliant. So how can we encourage people to get involved as developers? It's an easy way.
You mean how to get new developers or people?
Yeah,
people are hearing this who are going, why am I not an Orca developer?
Yes,
I should become
right,
Yes, anyone who wants to become an Orca developer or an Orca user should probably sign up for the Orca mailing list. I mean, that's, you know, we have lots of documentation on our wiki. People hang out in various chat rooms in IRC. But right now, the, you know, main place for... information exchange, discussion, bug discussion, everything has still been on the Orca list.
Right.
Which that is orca-list at gnome.org.
Okay.
Is the list address. The wiki is http://live.gnome.org/orca. And Orca is with a capital O. RCA.
Okay.
And don't put a www in front of live.
Right.
People
make
that mistake and then they never find it.
Right, okay. Well, thank you very much, Jody. And I must say, the Orca team, as with all of the GNOME accessibility team, are incredibly friendly and helpful and welcoming of new people.
I'll have to work on that.
Yeah. Well, I wish you luck anyway.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much. Okay.